This week on Making Contact, Katrina uncovers environment, health, and rescue.
We were physically prohibited from walking out of New Orleans by armed police officers from suburban communities outside of New Orleans.
Get every doggone Greyhound bus line in the country and get their asses moving to New Orleans.
The results are not acceptable.
My child was scared for her life. She was scared to death.
This is a national emergency and we need your help.
Millions of lives torn apart, a city in ruins, and a government in denial. No doubt, Katrina is one of the most catastrophic and costly events ever to hit the U.S.
In this first part of a special series, you'll hear the powerful stories from those who survived, and you'll find out how you can help with the relief efforts in your local communities and beyond.
We'll also take a look at how the events unfolded after Katrina smashed into the shores of the southern U.S. coastline, and we'll talk to a water expert who explains what the people in the Gulf Coast might be up against in the coming months. I'm Tina Rubio.
And I'm Justin Beck.
We're your hosts this week on Making Contact, a program creating connections between people, vital ideas, and important information. All the warnings were there.
The storm is potentially so destructive that authorities have ordered the entire city of New Orleans, of more than 1 million residents, to be evacuated.
We cannot stress enough the danger this hurricane poses to Gulf Coast communities.
We are encouraging all of our citizens to leave the city of New Orleans. This storm is enormous.
Those who could leave did.
The roads out of New Orleans are moving at a crawl as tens of thousands of people heed the call to evacuate.
But tens of thousands were left behind.
Residents unable to leave because of poor health, age, or financial problems are being moved to special emergency shelters.
This is, again, going to be perhaps a historic event, and unfortunately a potentially catastrophic event.
Then, a national nightmare.
Hurricane Katrina is estimated to have killed thousands of people, forced the evacuation of tens of thousands more, and caused...
And we will not allow bureaucracy to get in the way of saving lives.
Why aren't we ready? Why weren't we prepared for something like this, which after all has been foreseen by many experts for a long time?
The cries for help seem to go unheard.
These people couldn't leave because they couldn't afford to leave. Superdome people went in that shelter because they couldn't afford to leave. And now we're dying?
We don't have no running water. We can't be by ourselves. We're hungry and everything.
We don't either.
I need reinforcements. I need troops, man. I need 500 buses, man. Don't tell me 40,000 people are coming here. They're not here. It's too doggone late. Now get off your asses and let's do something, and let's fix the biggest goddamn crisis in the history of this country.
The guy who runs this building I'm in, emergency management, he's responsible for everything. His mother was trapped in St. Bernard Nursing Home, and every day she called him and said, "Are you coming, son? Is somebody coming?" And she said, "Yeah, Mama, somebody's coming to get you. Somebody's coming to get you on Tuesday. Somebody's coming to get you on Wednesday. Somebody's coming to get you on Thursday. Somebody's coming to get you on Friday." And she drowned it Friday night. She drowned it Friday night. Nobody's coming to get her. The secretary has promised. Everybody's promised. They've had press conferences. I'm sick of the press conferences. For God's sakes, shut up and send her somebody.
Due to the hurricane in the area you are calling, your call cannot be completed at this time. Please try your call later. 012T.
Even though the floodwaters have started to recede, the search for survivors goes on, and those that did survive are faced with the reality that it could be a long time before many can call parts of Louisiana, Mississippi, and Alabama home. So for now, thousands of evacuees remained housed at the Houston Astrodome in Texas. The KPFT news team is on the scene in Houston and spoke with a number of people still looking for loved ones and searching for answers to what happened.
I come out the Superdome. They left us in there. They just left us in there to die. And I was one of the ones who lived a life of misery in the Superdome.
We just ask that people be praying. It's time for people all across the nation that believe in prayer to pray.
I've been down here since
since like Tuesday. We done lost everything. We're trying to get our whole family together.
I'm looking for a Miss Willie Bell Call, a Miss Norma Call, a Miss Sheila Call, a Mr. Daryl Wilson.
When we got to Baton Rouge, we ain't even had a chance to get out and go ask them about our family. No, we asking them, we like, man, what about our family, this and that and that. They like, well, y'all about to go to Texas. How you going to say we're going to Texas and I don't even know nothing about my people, man? I'm straight from New Orleans. I don't know nobody from Texas.
Women was having their babies. They were just throwing them in the garbage can. Children was committing suicide, jumping off the Superdome because their family done lost their whole family and nothing to live for. People leaving their kids. They think some of those kids are lost. They're not lost. The people abandoned them. Their parents abandoned them. All those kids not lost. They left them.
My Uncle Michael Daniel and Tyrone Daniel. That's what I'm looking for. I have a big old sign out here. If you hear me, give me a call. It's 4343 Shaver, Pasadena. That's where we stand at, Pasadena, Texas.
My sister is here with me who lost her home, her place of employment, her animals, everything but what she had on. Her husband is stranded in Mississippi, along with a lot of other family members that we can't reach by phone and haven't been able to reach for 2 days. We're trying to put together help. We're trying to figure out how to get there to get them out.
I'm so happy that I was able to get me and my 4 kids out there, and I had to pray for the people who we left behind as we was on the bus going up the bridge looking back.
To find out how you can help, log on to our website at radioproject.org.
What has happened down here is the wind had changed. Clouds roll in from the north and it start to rain.
We've all seen the pictures, people slogging through rancid water that's now draining into Lake Pontchartrain. And as most of us know, a city flooded with water mixing with chemicals and sewage and sludge can be a deadly combination for the outbreak of waterborne diseases. And at the time of this report, 4 people have died from a bacterial disease similar to cholera, and outbreaks of dysentery and E. coli have been reported. I spoke with international water quality and public health expert Dr. Joan Rose to help us understand what the people of the Gulf Coast could face in the coming weeks and months.
What's going to happen in Louisiana with the water situation there? I'm watching video and I keep seeing all this kind of green, yellowish, brown water that's draining out into the lake. And I'm just wondering, you know, we're hearing that there's outbreaks of dysentery or E. coli, and I just wondering what the people might be up against.
You know, we've always known when you start mixing human waste or even animal waste with water supplies, water that people swim in, play in, even walk in, you know, like you saw those people wading through these floods, and of course the water that people drink, this can spread disease. The sewage contains a whole range, over 100 different types of microorganisms that can cause disease. And in fact, one little drink of water can start the disease process, and the type of illnesses like diarrhea, respiratory disease, skin infections, eye infection, these are all the things that we see when people either swim, get exposed to polluted water. You know, the other thing is that we kind of expect some of these illnesses when people get exposed to polluted water. But in this situation, it's really kind of scary, and we're just hoping that they don't get exposed to too many pathogens that can cause real severe illness. They're stressed. People are already dehydrated. And, you know, they're particularly susceptible then to getting these infections and then not being able to get access maybe to the medical care that they need. That's a real severe combination.
Does this mean that if people have to wade through the water, what is the potential then for someone to come down with one of these waterborne illnesses?
Even walking through some of these waters that are polluted, we know that, and there's debris everywhere, you know, and you've seen it on the news, you can cut your foot or your leg, and the organisms can actually enter through these cuts, and they can get in the bloodstream and cause serious illness. We even have naturally occurring types of organisms. The Gulf of Mexico particularly has an organism called a Vibrio vulnificus. It's actually related to the cholera organism, but it's natural in the Gulf of Mexico, and it could actually grow to real high concentrations when the conditions get just right, like a mixture of marine and fresh waters and things get just right. And that organism, if it gets in your blood, can cause some real serious illness as well, and it causes fever and a septicemia, and it can even cause death in people that are susceptible.
What would you recommend that people do? Especially, I've been seeing a lot of footage of people still sort of wading through the waters, and what would you advise people to do? Because you're saying that if they cut themselves, then they can contract, you know, one of these diseases, and is it basically just stay out of the water, and if you come down with a fever, get some help?
If you've got to wade in the water, if you have any neosporin and things like that, if you could put that over any cuts that you might have, wear pants and shoes so that you don't get cut. And, of course, it might be very difficult to take a shower afterwards, but any kind of soap and water or these alcohol gels, things like that, where you could kind of clean up afterwards. You know, our young children and infants are the most susceptible, so trying to protect them from the exposure, you know, is helpful. These are some of the things we can do, try to do, but you're in a dire situation in some cases. I know it's getting better now, but early on, you know, you didn't have access to any of these things. So what are you going to do? It's very, very difficult.
How do you think the state of Louisiana, what are they going to do to try to treat the water?
Well, you know, it's very interesting because, of course, the American Society for Civil Engineering had rated the U.S. infrastructure, including water and wastewater, and they looked at the infrastructure by state, and they looked at Louisiana and Mississippi and Alabama, and throughout the U.S., we actually are getting about a D to a D minus in our infrastructure for water, which means that we know we have a lot of failing systems, and we need to put money into these systems. Of course, something like this happens, and Louisiana was in the DD minus range for both wastewater and drinking water, and it was estimated billions of dollars needed to be spent to upgrade the infrastructure. So this means that now we've got even more of a tremendous challenge to go back and provide both good wastewater transmission, disposal, and then make sure that the drinking water treatment is up to par.
And what about the short term?
It's going to be a matter of what happens to Lake Pontchartrain as they pump all this contaminated stormwater into the lake, and then getting the sewer system and the sewage system back up to par where people can actually live. And the other thing is looking at what happens to Lake Pontchartrain. That's going to have, that could have very long-term ramifications. That was a recreational area. It's also a fisheries area. We're talking about perhaps new hazardous algal blooms, proliferation of this Vibrio I talked about before, and, you know, impact on the whole ecosystem and that whole, you know, degrading the value of that coastline, which, it, you know, from the tourism standpoint and the fisheries standpoint.
Absolutely. And now, Joan, is there anything else that you'd like to add?
This reminds us that, you know, our community safety is really tied to public health. And we have neglected our public health infrastructure as well, which means that all the public health servants, the people, the nurses, the doctors, the people that serve the community, they are sorely needed and in short supply, and this points that out. And we need to really use this disaster to create a good vision of what we want in the future, and that includes a strong public health.
Dr. Rose is the Homer Nolan Chair in Water Research at Michigan State University.
We'll have more on Hurricane Katrina in a few moments. You're listening to Making Contact, a production of the National Radio Project. If you'd like more information or for cassette or CD copies of this program, please call 800-529-5736. That's 800-529-5736. Or you can visit our website at radioproject.org.
On September 10th, the American Red Cross announced that it now needs 40,000 new volunteers for the hurricane relief effort. Local chapters of the Red Cross, more than 900 across the U.S., are currently accepting applications. Jobs include answering phones, counseling traumatized families, even going to the disaster area to provide direct relief to the hurricane victims. In each case, no experience is necessary.
Meanwhile, at these same local chapters, survivors and evacuees are steadily coming through the door. These are people who have lost their homes, their jobs, their means of transportation, all their material belongings, and many of them are still searching for missing family members and loved ones. More than 2 weeks after the most devastating natural disaster in U.S. history, some Americans are still wondering how they can help. With that question in mind, I paid a visit to my local Red Cross chapter at 3901 Broadway Street in Oakland, California. Nestled among motels, gas stations, and other small businesses, this place can hardly keep up with all the hopeful recruits waiting in line to sign up. Volunteers from all over the Bay Area are coming here in the thousands. According to the volunteer staff, as many as 3,000 so far just at this Oakland intake center.
And Susan, can I just go ahead and grab your application here?
So all I need to do is show up tomorrow morning, right?
Show up tomorrow morning. Thank you so much.
In an upstairs auditorium, dozens of people fill out one-page application forms and listen to brief orientations.
Yeah, we put them on file.
Many, if not most, of these new volunteers have no experience in disaster relief. But the Red Cross needs them anyway, and the need is urgent. Within a few hours of signing up, some, like Joanne Lyons, are leading sessions on phone banking, family care, and what the Red Cross calls deployment, which means traveling to the areas devastated by Hurricane Katrina to care for those who most need it. Within the next 2 weeks, the American Red Cross hopes to send 10,000 recruits to the Gulf Coast to help with the ongoing relief effort.
My name is Joanne, and like you, I'm a volunteer. I came here at 10:30 this morning, and I volunteered for Family Services. But I said, well, since I'm here, isn't there anything else I can do? And here I am giving orientation. So the first job is called the Local Call Center. The local call center is if you dial the 800 number, it's the number you dial to say, where do I go, what do? Where do I send money? The next is what they call the National Call Center. The National Call Center is the 800 number for those people who are affected by the hurricane. What you'll need to do is give those people resources, how to find their families, where to go. So you'll need a certain amount of computer skills. So a person would call and say, I'm in Biloxi, Mississippi, on the corner of X and Y. Where do I go for something? And you'll need to do the map quest to get them from one place to another. The third job that's available is family services. There are some people that came out here. They are New Orleans residents, they're Alabama residents, they're Mississippi residents, and they had family out here thinking that they could escape and go back home, and now they have no place to go to. These people will need assistance in finding resources and relocation and work. The last one is deployment. As you know, many people have come in here wanting to be deployed outside to the affected areas. The way it's going to work is once you're deployed, you will be given a round-trip ticket, as I understand it, and you'll be sent to Houston. Everyone goes to Houston, and Houston, they will decide where you go and what you will do. So although you may like cute little kids and want to bounce them on your lap, you may be the one that ends up cleaning the toilets. You have a one-day training. You must be available for 7 days. You have a 9-day commitment. You have to do whatever it is you're told to do. This is a national emergency, and we need your help.
Hi, my name's Leslie Toy, and I'm a volunteer. This is called a hardship deployment, so we really want to make sure that people understand what they're getting into. First of all, there's water disruptions, which means that the water is not safe in the area, which means you will have limited showers and washing facilities. You will be only drinking bottled water. It could also mean that you are issued a jug or a container of water in the morning, which you use for your washing, your drinking, your everything. Power outages, which is normal, you know, that means lights, no electricity, means no traffic lights, no office machines, no cooking facilities, limited food availability. If you need to eat in regular at regular intervals of time, and some people need to be, that may not happen. Housing shortages, the evacuees are in a lot of the hotels, so there's a shortage of hotels. So chances are you're sleeping in a staff shelter. You may not be sleeping on a cot. You may be sleeping on the floor. Medical care is also very scarce, and so are medical supplies. Potential for extreme emotional stress may include high number of deaths, massive destruction, victims expressing grief, anger and frustration to relief workers, and worker personal safety issues, and possible reoccurrence of the disaster. One, two, or three of these things are difficult, but all of them together makes it extremely difficult. This is not a time to test your mettle. This is a time when you have to know that you can do it. So if you have any doubts whatsoever, don't do this. Okay? You still want to go? All right. Sign up.
After Leslie's orientation, I spoke with a few volunteers in the audience who did sign up.
I'm Regina Reynolds, and I live in Richmond. And I've heard about the Katrina disaster, and it's been on my heart to contribute in some way, to help in some way. And so that's why I'm here today, to come in and sign up and sign up for deployment. And
do you feel prepared to do this?
I feel ready. You know, I feel like it's almost like a calling, you know, like I have to go, you know.
As local volunteers are upstairs preparing for deployment to the Gulf Coast, downstairs, dozens of evacuees are arriving from there.
My name is Curtis Washington. I'm from New Orleans. I lived in the lower Ninth Ward. Me and my nephew, Paul, we decided to ride the storm out. I told my nephew it was time to go, but he had a dog with him that he didn't want to leave that was kind of old. The dog had cataracts. So we brought the dog up to the second floor with us. Then the water started to recede the first day, and then the next day it started rising higher. That's when we heard the order to get out. So by the time the water got to be, I guess, about 10 or 12 feet, and it started coming up to the second floor, the dog started going wild. But the dog couldn't see, but he could hear. Then the water rose more. The dog jumped into the water, and my cousin, my nephew, jumped in after him. Dog couldn't see, but the dog could hear. He led us to safety by swimming towards the bridge where we live at. When we got in the water, we saw a body floating by, and to get to the bridge, you got to push the body out of the way. Being on the bridge, being stuck and don't know whether you're going to make it from day to day, the law of survival kicks in. The ones who had to go in stores like us, it was for survival, for water, for orange juice, for things we couldn't get. There was nowhere to cook. There was no running water. And we only took what we need. So when they call us looters, how can you loot when nobody's trying to help you? So therefore, you have to help yourself. One of our relatives drove down from Oakland by himself to Texas where we was and drove us back. It was like 18 of us in a van together because we were staying in one room. So Oakland is really showing us love.
You gonna go back?
Louisiana will always be my home. I don't know if I'm going to go back because I feel like right now, I don't know exactly where I'll be in the world, but I'm just trying to find my way because I believe the richest people will go back. For the rest of us, the working class of us, I think it's going to be a slow process for us. What they say, they may be able to build them in a year or two. Where we live and where the most devastation was is going to be from 5 to 10. So there's no going back for us. We're trying to make our way in the world.
My name is Cecile Eugene. I'm from New Orleans. I've been living out here in Berkeley, California. My daughter sent her kids to me like about 3 weeks before this hurricane happened. And thank God she did. No telling. I don't even want to imagine what could have happened. But she had to swim for her life. And now she's sick somewhere in Austin, Texas. I have no idea. With balls all over her body, a bad infection. Nobody told her what's wrong with her.
What is your daughter's name?
Rynika Slaughter. My phone number out here is 510-467-4954. And it's just, I'm so stressed out from this. It's terrible. I see how the people at 9/11 felt now, you know. You can't believe this kind of stuff is happening. And I'm going to tell you, sir, we ain't got no money. We poor. You know, we ain't no highly educated people that's got a lot of, you know, degrees. And we just, you know, I mean, my family, we've been struggling all our life. And that's no way to treat a human being just because we ain't got no money. You know, it's no way to treat a human being. My child was scared for her life. My child didn't know whether she was going to die in that civic convention center or whatever it was. You know, she was scared to death. My brother, his name is Michael Briscoe. We ain't heard from him since the hurricane. Nobody in the family. I'm not mad at one person. I'm upset at the fact that our government is not right. It can't be right. I know the 9/11 was wrong, but it make you wonder, you know, why did they do that? Because of government policies. Who government? Our government. I mean, Bush said, "Oh, we gonna fix it." Fix it? You better, you know, get our people from dying over there in Iraq and let them come over here and fix this. Fix America first, because we have too much hate in America. Further, black people need to feel that they're more accepted in America. All these hundreds of years, we still don't feel like we equal. What you think the Iraqis looking at? They're going, look how they doing them people down there. You think they going to fix our country? Look how they do their own people. Red Cross is doing what they can for us. Red Cross is not the government. FEMA, Michael Brown, I'm blaming. Bush, I mean, they done caught him in so many lies. I guess he's the only man I know that can just lie and get away with it.
That's it for this edition of Making Contact. Thanks for listening. Special thanks to Anna Riolini, Leanne Caldwell, Dan Turner, Kathy Beistel, and the KPFT news team, Renee Feltz, Valerie Torres, and Smiley Maddox. Our theme music is by the Charlie Hunter Trio.
Making Contact is an independent production funded primarily by generous gifts from people in the community. For a cassette or CD copy of program number 3805, call the National Radio Project at 800-529-5736. That's 800-529-5736. You can also visit our website at radioproject.org.
Lisa Redman is our executive director, Dorian Taylor, communications manager, Esther Mania, outreach coordinator, Tom Evans, development associate, Emily Polk, production fellow, and Megan Kaiser and Lawton Chan, production interns. I'm Tina Rubio.
And I'm Justin Beck. Thanks for listening to Making Contact.